Hello, everyone, and welcome to another monthly Coach Ed conversation with me, Richard Reid, and my wonderful co-host, Dan Steele. Dan, great to be back together again. How are things with you today?
They are wintry, chilly, and a bit crisp down here in Australia. I was going to say sunny Melbourne, but in freezing cold Melbourne. Though it's relative, isn't it, Richard? I complain about the weather and then you tell me over in Northern Ireland what it's like for you.
Yes, but you know something? It is warm here at the moment. We've had 24, 25 degrees over the last couple of days. I have a t-shirt representing the weather, which I think is fantastic. So I am full of summer sun. It's superb.
I think it's a nice segue to try and get people. Just a reminder, everyone, we've got a video for this podcast. So if you would like to see this, it is a very nice t-shirt, I should say, too. But for all those people listening, you should start to actually watch the videos too.
It's worth checking it out. Now, if this is your first time joining us, as always, a very warm welcome. If you've been following us maybe for a number of episodes, thank you for taking the time to listen in. And actually, I would like to share a special shout out to a former GCI colleague, Jasmine Miller, who shared a lovely post on LinkedIn recently referring to a previous Coach Ed conversation episode. Dan and I want to really encourage you, the listeners, to comment on, share these conversations. So please do join in the conversation wherever possible. Okay, back to today's episode. As always, Dan and I will use our familiar three-question framework. So what have we noticed? Why does that matter? And what has become clearer for us? And we'll use these questions to explore another important coaching challenge within education. So today's conversation feels especially relevant because we're going to spend some time thinking about system support and what it actually takes to set coaches up for success in schools so that it's not just a series of short-lived initiatives. So without further ado, Dan, when you think about system support and setting coaches up for success, what have you noticed recently?
I love this three-part framework that we use, Richard. And I just want to recognise, thank you, Jasmine Miller. You're an absolute legend too.
Yes.
So what have I noticed? So from working with recently, especially with the work we're doing with Brisbane Catholic Education, so a complete rollout across their whole system of schools. So that's the big system. And then also talking to leaders in independent Catholic and also government schools here in Australia, what I'm noticing is there's a real need for getting clear on what coaching is and isn't. And I know that might sound slightly silly, but just from the get-go, as a leadership group, executive group, the people that are going to be coaching, if we're not clear on what coaching is, so it could be leadership coaching and also instructional coaching. But from an instructional coaching perspective, I guess, like if we're clear on what it is, what it isn't, that then really sets people up to start to work out, well, who are the people that we want to make sure we're coaching? Who are the people that are coaching? What does that actually look like? What do we need to put in place for it? So I think it can start as simply as the person that goes off and they might do some training and some professional development. They get clear, but we might not have shared clarity on what coaching actually is and particularly what it isn't. I think I might have shared a story in a previous episode as well about one of the first times, it was probably 10 years ago, when I first started engaging in this work with coaching, and I incorrectly started just saying over and, all right, so coaching, we're going to be doing coaching. And I realized that coaching had been done to a lot of people. So another thing that I've noticed is the importance of, the fancy wording would be theoretical consistency, Richard, which is just a fancy way of saying, are we all on the same page with what we believe and the approach that we're going to take with coaching? And I think for us, it's really thinking about what I've noticed is leaders are responding really well to what is our belief about coaching. Is it strengths-based? So are we here to support and build up people, or are we trying to fix people? So often I find that there's sometimes a difference between that. There's an inconsistency with that. And then it's making sure that we're all on the same page. So do we actually understand? We talk about working in partnership or, you know, supporting people, but what do we actually mean by that? So getting consistent with our understanding of what do we mean by partnership? And then therefore, what is it that the coaches are going to be doing? So I've also noticed as well, this clarity that's needed for what coaches do, what don't they do, and where does their time go? Because if we've got really clear about what coaching is, what it isn't, that helps us start to work out their role. They then start to realize what it is that they need to be focusing on their time. And I've also noticed there's a real power in sitting and down and having almost two separate conversations. There's one with the instructional coach or the leadership coach or the coach, and getting them to almost draw down, where are you spending your time each week? What does that look like? And then in a perfect world, what would it look like? And then doing the same with whoever the senior leader is that might have decisional authority, but them doing it, and you often find there's a difference. So the aim is if they can both be really clear, and for anyone watching the video, I can't help but hold my hands up now, but I almost think of like pie charts, and the two people will have slightly different pie charts of where the time's going and what it's focused on. And when it can work really well to set the coaches up for success, both those pie charts can look the same. So the leader's aware of what the coach does, what they don't do, where their time's going and why.
Mm-hmm.
And that way, really confident, they've got the backing, so then they're more likely to be able to go spend that time doing that work instead of going and spending time on lower impact work. So yeah. I think that's what I've noticed from different leaders and also through the work that we're doing with BCE as a whole system too.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And that is a big program you're working at the moment. We're seeing a lot of stuff coming through from social media, which is superb, very encouraging. So looking at a lot of clarity, making sure that there's clarity around what coaching is and what coaching isn't for all parties involved. I think that's really important. And yes, that phrase, theoretical consistency, is really important. You're running a partnership. Where are you spending your time? Great questions to be asking. There seems to be an awful lot to get in place to make sure we're setting coaches up for success. Why does it matter? I mean, why do we need to put all this time into making sure our coaches are set up for success?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing too is what I've also noticed is that a lot of the time the people championing the work or leading the work of coaching in a school or a system, they might not actually have the support themselves. So I think why does it matter is if people don't have the right supports or the implementation supports, it often becomes a false start. And we all know, you know, with the different research around change efforts and things like that, majority fail. It's actually more normal for disorder to be happening than, you know, things to be working smoothly, right? That's just the nature of life and nature in general. So I guess it's, why does this matter? Well, if people are clear, we're more likely to be able to understand, select the right people to be engaged in the coaching, to be able to make it a priority. Instead of a program, we want to make it a priority that's embedded. The research with coaching cultures continues to highlight this idea of, whilst we might not have a full agreement on the definition of a coaching culture, what we are clear on is when it's embedded, when it's in strategic plans, when it's in people's plans, when it's a key priority, not just a program to be ticked off, it's more likely to work. So I would say, why does it matter? If you've got really great shared clarity of what it is, what it isn't, and people are supporting you, you've got leaders supporting you, you've got the coach clear on what they're doing, well, then it can actually feed down to either the teams that are engaging in the work or the individuals that are engaging in the work and wanting to bring about a change in their kids and their classrooms. But I think that's a key thing is making sure that we've got that. And also the person actually leading it, that they've got either a coach or someone supporting them to be able to really have clear oversight and make sure that they're getting the supports, because it's a multi-year effort. Yeah. It's not a, right, we've done this workshop, though we love running workshops, Richard, but it's, you know, it's not do one workshop and that's it. You know, it's a multi-year effort.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key thing is, so I think another fancy wording would be learning architecture. So you want to have pretty much all the people that are involved in the coaching are getting the right supports, and that'll look slightly different if you're a teacher, if you're a coach, if you're an aspiring coach, if you're a middle leader or a senior leader. There's different supports, or the person that's actually driving the instructional coaching or the coaching across your school.
Yeah.
You need to have certain supports in place. And why does it matter? Well, in order for it to work and be embedded and actually move from being a program to just a part of what we do,
you
need to have those in place.
I love it. And that's really helpful. I love that phrase, it's a priority, not a program. And quite often, you know, we look at coaching as, this is another program. You know, this is something we're going to put in place. It's another initiative. And we get a lot of excitement around it. We get a lot of get up and go and people are enthusiastic. But it needs to be a priority. It needs to be something that's going to be, used the word embedded. So if you're thinking about schools out there who are maybe looking at, potentially looking at coaching, and here's something we could look at, here's something we could actually get up and running properly. What has become clearer then for you? And what advice can we give these folks at that, in those sort of early stages?
I think as simple as asking yourself the question, if this was working well, and I've been doing this with people recently, is if this was going really well in 12 months, what would you be noticing? And I think there's sometimes an appeal to say, if this was working really well by the end of your four-year school cycle and school review cycle, what would that look like? I think that's sometimes too big. So sometimes people will say, when I ask them the question, or, you know, as we get clear on what would look different if it was working really well and we're high-fiving each other at the end of 12 months, often they probably say things that are still too big. So then it's lovely because you say, okay, so let's break those down into smaller parts. So what do you need? What are your indicators of success or progress with those? And then that becomes really freeing for the person, because they actually realize year one might actually be about getting a certain group of people on board, really understanding what it is, giving the coaches a chance to just practice some cycles, build up their coaching expertise, their coaching skills, build credibility, get the right people on board. I think that's a key part with it.
Yeah, fantastic. And again, when it comes to, you know, materials out there to point people towards, and we have a very, very useful book, if I can hold this up here, Evaluating Instructional Coaching. You know, so if folks are looking at putting instructional coaching into place in their schools, I mean, that book from Jim Knight from the Instructional Coaching Group, just a really practical, useful guide as to see, you know, how is this working? I love that question. Yeah. In 12 months, what would you be noticing? And that's a lovely question.
I think it's purposely starting with that, because there's a really helpful other question you can ask too, is, or you can say, knowing all that's occurring in your work right now, or knowing that all the different demands that you have, in order for this to be making progress and working well, so what is it you need to focus on? And then they'll often tell you other things that people need to do, and you go, great. Okay, so you've told me all the different things there that others can be doing. So what is it that you then need to make sure you're focusing on? It just helps get that clarity. And I think in a world right now where it's, you know, there's so much chaos and uncertainty, it can just help bring them back into that sphere of control. But all right, this is my area. This is what I can really focus on. And it goes from being this big thing of, you know, a multi-year effort to suddenly say, oh, okay, actually, I'm getting clarity over the next 8 weeks of what coaching is and what it isn't.
Yeah, and I love that idea of asking that question. What are you focusing on to a range of different people? You know, we could very easily talk to just the school leader, we could talk to the senior leadership team, but actually the people who are involved, who are delivering the coaching, the people who are receiving the coaching, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Asking those people, what do we need to focus on, and taking that information and saying, where are the gaps? Where are things overlapping? And doing that on a regular basis to make sure what you're doing really is being embedded.
Yeah, is it all right if I just share one more thing, Richard?
Go for it, please do.
A group that was saying they even sought out just being aware, you know, we know language matters and words matter. So they were just mindful of, well, what are the words we definitely don't want to be using when we're talking about this, you know? So they didn't want to use success.
Okay.
So they just wanted to talk about, you know, trialing, experimenting, giving it a go. So they were less about the success because they felt it was about the outcomes. They were aware of the outcomes they were working towards, but they even thought of, when we're talking to staff, when we're talking within our, we want to, oh, so what are we noticing that's different? And what are the things that we're trying out? What are we playing with? So they were mindful of even that, just because every culture is different. Every school culture and group is different. So even something like that, I found really fascinating as well. But what about yourself, Richard Reid?
Okay.
What have you noticed?
A number of things. And I think, to help people out who are listening or who are watching in, I think the differences around the world are important, just to sort of paint a wee bit of context for folks. So, I mean, if you're in the US and you're looking at instructional coaching, for example, you know, 30 years of research, up and running a long time. So those folks have been around a lot of corners and developed a lot of new ideas and really have a lot of things embedded. So, you know, you're full-time instructional coaches in schools. That's the norm in many schools, which is fantastic. So, you know, there are systems in place, which is really important. There's protected structures in many ways. For you folks, you know, in Australia, you know, you're not too far behind these guys. You're doing some amazing stuff in a lot of your schools, and I have the privilege of interviewing some of these people on the podcast, and it's just tremendous to see permanent positions where people are instructional coaches, leadership coaches, and there's investment, time and finance going in there. For me, over here, UK-wise, specifically Northern Ireland, we're obviously that wee bit further behind, and that we're still unpacking what a coaching culture really looks like. So we're still developing those ideas. We're playing around with different things and sort of trying to get things up and running, okay? So in some of the best case examples over here where coaching's starting to take shape, gain a little bit of ground, quite often you've one enthusiastic leader. Somebody's flying the flag for coaching. And that's good. We need those people in position. But so we're starting from that point. So over here, UK, particularly Northern Ireland, in some cases, coaching can still be, in many ways, perceived as an intervention. Okay, so you know we're going to bring in some coaching, not to fix people, but to help or support, and it's very well intentioned. But it's something external. You know, we're bringing somebody in, so we're a wee bit off that idea of developing a coaching culture within our school. We're heading that direction, but we're not just at the stage where we've got full time coaches in schools. Then we want to get there. You know, we're giving ourselves around about 30 years like the folks in the US, but we want to get there. You know, we want this to be a way of working. You know, it's the bottom line is it's a long-term strategy. Okay, so let me give you an example. At the moment, quite often, you know, leaders will bring coaches into schools over here to coach other people within the staff, not necessarily to coach themselves first. And I think there's something that we're missing something there a little bit. In some schools, not all of them. So it's coaching, for example, middle leaders. So a school will think, this is terrific, we'll bring a coach in, we'll spend a bit of time with middle leaders, and that's very worthwhile. Or particular teams, or heads of department. And that's really helpful. Or maybe staff that are struggling, maybe it could be beginning staff, you know, early career teachers that genuinely would benefit from coaching support. But unfortunately, in some cases, now not all, in some cases, those leaders bringing the coaches in have never really experienced a lot of coaching themselves, in some cases. And I think we're missing something there. So inevitably, if we're talking about sustainability and setting coaches up for success, there are some common barriers. So obviously, time comes up all the time. So you don't have somebody really, really protecting time for it. Okay, you talked about training. There's a lack of training. We're getting there slowly but surely, but we need everybody who's involved to understand, like you said at the outset, Dan, what coaching is and what coaching isn't. There needs to be an understanding around that for even external coaches to come in and have positive impact. So there's no, I suppose, shared language, or not enough of a shared language as to what coaching is, what it looks like, and so on. So therefore, ultimately, what I'm noticing is coaching can, with the best intention, become another initiative. So that's one of the main things I'm noticing over here at the moment.
I guess, why do you see it mattering? What's the impact or the difference if it moves from being just an intervention or an initiative and you've got the key champions actually getting coached? I mean, you've touched on it, but tell us a bit more about that.
I think there's a frustration, if I'm being honest, there's a frustration on my part because I have, and I'll use the word privilege, I have the privilege of talking to, you know, to folks from schools that you guys work with in Australia, in the States, you know, helping to deliver, you know, our accreditation program where you're developing coaches, and you're right at the chalk face. So I see the not just the potential, but the impact that really good, solid coaching cultures do have on well-being, on pupil outcomes, on, and the list is a long, long list. So for me, you know, to bring coaching in and set it up for success, you've got things like trust being built immediately. You look at things like retention of staff. You know, I can envisage, you know, schools over here where we start to develop a really good, strong coaching culture. Those are the sort of schools teachers are going to want to go and teach in, because there is that support and there's that common language. Developing people who become more reflective practitioners, and coaching plays a very solid part in helping people to become more reflective. Even leadership development within a school. You know, if you have a good coaching program that becomes part of what we do and who we are, then leadership development is going to expand. It's going to become an expansive thing. And even just simple things like thinking space, thinking time. You know, schools are crazy busy places, and it's an absolute gift, you know, to give a member of staff even a 20-30 minute period of protected thinking time where a coach is in having a coaching conversation. So it matters so much because of the potential to really benefit everybody. So we want to move from that idea of fixing, and there's nothing wrong with fixing in general. We like to fix things, but through to facilitating, you know, we go back to what is coaching? It's helping people do their best thinking. And what school leadership team doesn't want their team doing their best thinking? And I think, you know, it matters because leaders need to model that for the other staff. Because I think genuinely, and I've seen this within schools I've worked in, but also ones that have come in externally, to staff notice whether the leaders actually live this out themselves or simply promote it. And promoting coaching is not what they need to be doing. They need to live it out. They need to be there being coached themselves and then sharing that impact with the rest of their team. They need to be saying, you know, coaching matters enough for me to want to develop that and provide opportunities for other people. So that's why I think it really, really matters.
Just a few small things, just the fact that it can actually build up and grow and support our, you know, the whole workforce, and it can retain people, it can build trust. I mean, listening to everything you're saying, the really tricky part is because you and I both engaged in this work, we've both been lucky enough to do it when we were in schools as well. Like listening to you speak, it made me think about when I was an assistant principal, bringing that coaching approach in just everyday conversations, got a minute conversations, then also doing instructional coaching, then doing leadership coaching with our middle leaders. You know, we've lived in that. And I think listening to you, that there's a frustration because it's almost like when you're living in the future of someone else's future, you
yeah.
see all the benefits. You know, it's really, really great if we're willing to spend the time, as you said, you know, move it from being a coaching program to being
yeah.
something that's a part of just what we do. As you've, Richard, as you've said all this out loud, and it was great watching you again, I'd really welcome people to watch the video. There was the eyes going up and the smile breaking up, and you could see you were really doing some great thinking, and I could picture you picturing what can be happening. What's become clearer?
I think there's a huge, and I'm going to say responsibility, maybe on people like us as coaches, when we're talking to school leaders and we're advocating for bringing coaching into their school, dipping their toe in the water, whatever it might be, we need to really, really, really encourage those leaders to dip their toes in the water first and encourage them just to have a go. You know, give me half an hour for an initial coaching conversation just to see what you think of this. Because whenever they get a taste for it and they see the impact it can have on them, then they're going to become obviously much more authentic advocates for coaching. So, and I've sat, as I've said before, a bit like this one on the big black seat as a school leader. And if I feel something's really, really impactful and beneficial, I'm going to do what I can to spread that across other members of staff. So to come into a school and speak to a school leader and say, listen, here's something you really want to try out. They try it out. They decide this is actually really impactful on me as a leader. They become, I think over time, them show more empathy through the coaching process, through having been shown empathy to them. I think they become more empathetic towards others. So that's going to benefit staff. They're able to, in some cases, they're the only people who are able to protect the process. Because if it's not protected, we're talking about setting coaches up for success. If that's not protected, it's going to fall apart. It's going to break in the middle. So if we talk about the word sustainability, that comes from those folks at the top saying, okay, we're going to protect some time for this. So not just isolated coaching sessions, you know, one here, one there for various random people. There needs to be routine set up, you know, structures put in place. And I go back to that phrase, you know, we used it earlier on, that idea of a shared language. That's so, so important. You know, there's too many people coming to coaching conversations not knowing what to expect. And thinking, I'm just not convinced about this. You know, I'm going to speak to this guy, Richard, this afternoon for half an hour. Well, what's that all about? So there needs to be conversations beforehand to try and show people what it is, you know, they're volunteering for. You know, help them deal with that curiosity. And if the school leader and leaders are selling the idea to these people, then there's more chance that they're going to want to come more willingly. So there will be then, if the leaders are leading this, an ongoing, well, you would hope, an ongoing commitment. So coaching, and again, to use your words, Dan, it's no longer then a program. It becomes just how we do things around here. It's a conversational way of leading. So senior leaders need to be the ones who protect, I love the word, legitimize it. this is really important. They model it, they resource it, because I mean they're the ones with the hands and the money in many cases. So if they're selling the idea to maybe their board of governors or directors, depending on what way a school is structured, they can protect a bit of time, and they can avoid it. And this is really important. They can avoid it turning into surveillance. And that's one thing I'm always very careful with school leaders when we're at the initial stages of having these conversations. So I think that's why, you know, there's so much potential for this to really have positive impact. And, you know, I just hope I get that across to folks when I'm chatting to them.
It certainly sounds like it, Richard. I think, I'm sold. I'm a compelling case. Let's do it. No, I really do think, like, listening to everything that you said, it goes from something vague and fuzzy like building trust all the way through to, you know, actually allocating time and money, like a really concrete example of you choosing in your budget. Like, if you're serious about saying that this can make a difference, it can work, you're prioritizing it, you promote it, you're talking about, you're experiencing it, you're privileging it. Lots of P's here.
Yeah.
But then how does it show up? Well, from a leadership perspective, well, you're actually allocating the resources so that it's more likely to occur, or you're thinking about the structures in place. One thing we did at the last school that I worked in, as in when I was an assistant principal, was we had a team of us. It was called the school improvement team. And so we would ask them, we always assumed we had blind spots because we weren't necessarily in the teaching teams all the time or in the classroom. So we'd say, what are we missing? What are the structures that we need to think about? What are the processes that we're not aware of as leaders? Like, help us understand, what are we missing? And it was so helpful because we could then eliminate, or we'd realize right now we can't get rid of that barrier, but we're aware of it and we're going to start to work out ways we can. So listening to you, yeah, I think it's, I'm super inspired now, Richard. Let's just go and go take this forward. I think, we both know it makes a difference. And I think that's definitely come through from the way that you were talking. Yeah. I'm sure people listening would have heard that as well.
I think, and one other thought that actually come to mind, because I actually thought this would be really useful within this episode, is particularly, and I'm thinking about, you know, UK schools, specifically Northern Ireland schools, because we're just scratching the surface, you know, we're at that early stage. Through podcasts like this, conversations like this, you know, resources that are out there, they're plentiful. We can learn from other schools that are 5, 10, 15 years down the line, and we can in many ways avoid making the mistakes, the most common mistakes, you know, from other people's experiences, and build something better sooner, I think. And the one I'm going to flag up at the moment is through our coaching and education podcast that runs through those main episodes, Stories from the Field. We've one coming up. I'm recording it hopefully within the next week or two, St. Joseph's Institution International in Singapore. And this is a revisit. So there's an earlier episode. If folks want to go back and look at our earlier episodes, there's an SJI International episode with Steve Phantom and Russell Bennett. And this is maybe about 18 months, 2 years ago, where I interviewed them first about, they were maybe 10, 11 years into their coaching journey at that stage, doing amazing things. So this is a revisit episode, and it'll be coming out hopefully in a couple of weeks' time. But just to listen in to what those guys are doing is inspirational, you know, and we can learn from, in some cases, you know, obviously what worked well, but also what things didn't work so well and the changes they made. So I think there's just, you know, so much potential for setting coaches up for real success. And I hope we've inspired folks.
There's also, I think in our archive of episodes as well, we've got Jade West and Amy Franklin from Salesian College as well. Yep. There's another one. And then also Robin Treziak from Rivergum Primary School too. So you can get an array of different settings too. And they're such generous people, just thinking deeply about how do they actually turn it from a buzzword like coaching into
absolutely
an actual reality.
Mm-hmm. There are literally hours upon hours of podcast footage from ourselves that will genuinely inspire folks. So listen, thanks, Dan. As always, I have genuinely enjoyed this conversation. I look forward to it each month. So thanks for your thoughts, your reflections, and I've noted a few things down which are always really helpful for me and my own coaching practice. And for everyone who's listening out there, or maybe watching along, admiring the t-shirt, we hope that this conversation has given you something useful to reflect on within your context and your setting as well. And do please share your comments, your thoughts. Dan and I would love to hear them. As always, if there are other coaching challenges, maybe themes, questions that you would like us to explore in future episodes, we really would like to hear from you. Please do get in touch. But for now, and until our next episode, keep coaching, keep creating space for great conversations, and keep setting the conditions for coaching success. See you next time on the Coach Ed Conversations.